take your time and set up. Our last case is number 17-13003, AA Suncoast Chiropractic Clinic versus Progressive American Insurance Company et al. Ms. Aldrich.
Yes. May it please the court. I only have 10 minutes, so I'm going to have to concentrate on a couple key points to explain to this court why the B2 class certified by the district court in this case is eminently unworkable. Let's just look at the class definition. Now, this class definition is not claims handling. It's not the B3. This is the definition that the district court used to define the certified B2 class. Let's just look at the first 10 to 15 words of that definition and all of the individualized factual analyses that would be necessary just to make that determination. The first 10 words are all qualified providers who received an assignment of benefits from a claimant under a Progressive policy. What is a qualified provider? The certified definition says that a qualified provider is a provider qualified as described by subsection 1A of the PIP statute. That's a complicated question. Only certain categories of providers, and sometimes only in certain settings, are entitled to provide what's called initial services and care. And only other categories of providers, and sometimes only in certain settings, are qualified to provide follow-up services and care. And that follow-up services and care must be consistent with the medical diagnosis by the provider who provided the initial treatment and care. So in order to qualify all of the providers in this class, you're going to have to go through that analysis.
Why is that a difficult analysis?
Because, first of all, it's not necessarily ascertainable within Progressive's records because
It doesn't have to be.
No,
it
but it's...
It can be ascertainable in a lot of other possible ways, right?
Well, but it's the plaintiff has provided no roadmap to the court about how the qualification of these providers would be demonstrated and their ability, and also there would be ability to challenge all these things. For example, there's a fact question with regard to those providers in this class that provided follow-up services and care about whether that service and care was, quote-unquote, consistent with a medical diagnosis by a provider who was qualified to provide initial services and care. But go into the second thing, which is that they hold an assignment of benefits. An assignment of benefits is not a statutory form. An assignment of benefits is different. It's a document created by each provider for its own benefit. In this case, we have three medical providers that have sued. All three have different forms. And the question about whether an assignment of benefits is an actual and valid and legally binding assignment of benefits is an issue that gets litigated in the county and circuit courts of Florida every day. And we have cited a whole bunch of cases where assignment has become a determinative issue. Again, that's an issue that would have to be factually and legally determined member by member of this qualified provider class. And then let's look at the last part of that definition, assignment of benefits from a claimant under a Progressive policy. A claimant has been defined by the court as an injured person, so now we have to figure out if the person was truly injured, who received medical services for injuries sustained in an accident, as opposed to a pre-existing injury, within 14 days from a qualified provider. So notwithstanding the court's desire to create this B2, which somehow severs off all of the individual inquiries that are inherent in handling a PIP claim, they are in here. They are in the class definition. In order to determine who is in and out of this class, the court is going to have to look at the validity of an assignment, the qualifications of the provider, whether the insured is injured or not, whether that injury was sustained in an accident as opposed to something else. And just looking at that, it is clear that a B2 certification just finding these class members is not going to be workable. Moreover, for the claimant class, there's not even a claimant before this court. All three of the nominal plaintiffs here are medical providers with assignments, limited assignments of benefits from insurance. This court has not permitted B2 certification under these kinds of circumstances. We cited authority, particularly this court's decisions in the coastal neurology and DWFII cases, as well as Hefner versus Blue Cross Blue Shield. all insurance cases. Coastal and DWFII are particularly close to this case. Just like this case, they were PIP class actions under the Florida no-fault statute brought against an auto carrier. Just like this case, the plaintiffs were medical providers that held assignments of benefits from insureds.
So if this case were a potential class action brought by people injured in an auto accident who had their emergency medical care determinations set aside by a third party, the class could be certified?
Well, it would depend. Again, that's not the class that's certified.
But I know. I know. That's why I'm asking you a different set of facts.
Well, again, if it was defined.
If you had three class representatives who were people who had been injured in a car accident, were treated by, let's say, a hospital, which is undoubtedly a qualified provider for their injuries, had a treating physician provide an emergency medical care certification so that in their view they were entitled up to $10,000 in PIP benefits. Their medical expenses went way over $10,000. The insurance company sends out the records to a third-party physician who reviews them and says, no emergency medical care was needed here. Set it aside. The insurance company pays $2,500. And those injured individuals file a class action. Is that certifiable?
I would argue if it's claimants as defined by their claimant class, no, because you run into the same problems.
No, I'm creating my own class.
Okay.
I've got the plaintiff's lawyer's hat.
And I think the response would be the same because I think it is the nature of PIP litigation involving carriers and automobile accidents that you cannot run away from the need to look at these individualized issues. They're in
what individualized issues would you look at in terms of class membership in my hypothetical?
Well, they would need to be legitimately injured.
Of course.
They would need to have incurred.
Don't you have that in almost every class action that you need legitimate class members?
Yes. And
who have to provide satisfactory proof of their membership in the class?
Yes.
Okay, that's not difficult to do.
Well, I would argue that
in my hypothetical, they were treated at a hospital, and they had medical expenses that way exceeded the $10,000 PIP ceiling.
Right, but in your hypothetical, the facts reveal that if someone was treated as a hospital, Progressive assumed they had an emergency medical condition. They would not have been limited to $2,500.
No, you can't change my facts.
Okay.
I get to create them.
Okay.
In my facts, the insurance company, nevertheless, sends the medical records out to a third-party doctor and that for review, and that third-party doctor, without ever having examined the individual, says no emergency medical care was needed. You don't have to pay the $10,000, and the insurance company says, we're giving you $2,500, no more, no less.
I still don't think it could be a class because I think the determination of injury is not easily ascertainable, but also, again, that somewhat bleeds into the merits.
So you don't think any class could be certified?
I don't.
With the dispute at issue here?
Yes, I would. That is my position because, again, the nature of these PIP cases and all the issues that come into them drive the ability to certify the class. But this is also bleeding.
What is the problem with certifying that my potential class for a declaratory judgment that you, the insurance company, cannot set aside an emergency medical care determination by a providing physician or a treating physician through submitting records to a doctor who's never seen them?
Well,
what's the problem there? Because then that still leaves everything else in play. It still leaves all the factual issues you're concerned about in play. It leaves all of your potential defenses in play. And it lets you litigate those issues separately. But all you get is a declaratory judgment saying, if you have someone who had an emergency medical care designation provided by a treating physician, you cannot then use a third-party doctor who's never seen the individual to reverse the emergency medical care designation. What is the difficulty of handling that sort of a class with that sort of proposed relief?
Because this court has not permitted B2 certification in that scenario because it doesn't drive the resolution of the litigation. what is happening here and what happens in the county court.
It drives it a lot of the way because it tells you you can't do what you've done.
It doesn't resolve the underlying claim for benefits, which is what this case at the end of the day is all about. There is a mechanism in state court, and believe me, there are tens of thousands, as the amicus brief pointed out, and the litigation has increased sixfold. But there is a mechanism to address this, and this is a damages claim in state court, in county court or circuit court, as the case may be. And at that point, everything about the treatment, the extent of the treatment, the bills that haven't been paid, why they haven't and haven't been paid, the benefits due, including the issue of whether the insurer refused to pay or reduced payment on any reason, whether it's because they sent it out for an EMC review or another peer review or for any purpose whatsoever, that gets resolved in one proceeding. And that's what the Florida PIP statute subsection 15 contemplates, that we don't create a multiplicity of litigation where we bring a deck action to ask one advisory question of the law and then bring another deck action and then ultimately get to a damages action. We resolve the entirety of the PIP treatment and the bills at dispute. And here we are dealing with providers who are arguing over bills, and they have a remedy for that, and that is an individual claim for damages under the PIP statute.
Your first argument in your brief dealt with a standing question, right?
Yes.
Do you agree that there are some class representatives who have standing, putting aside the other issues you've identified?
Yes, I believe that there are some class members that may have standing.
No, that do have standing right now.
Yes.
This stage of the proceeding, even given the framework set up in Robbins versus Garrison.
Within, as we said, we could not drill down to actually who had an affirmative EMC before they came in, because the company could only drill down to people whose bills were reduced or denied because of some EMC-related issue, but they didn't know if they had met the Robbins requirement. Yes, undoubtedly some amount of people within that did meet the Robbins requirement.
Including some of the individuals who assigned their claims to the purported class representatives.
Undoubtedly, our problem is, as we have said, is ascertaining who those are is not a feasible process.
So for standing purposes, this is not an insurmountable problem, which is requiring a narrowing of the class, right, insofar as Robbins is concerned. Putting aside your other issues.
Yes, putting aside the other issues, yes. Right now, there's a glaring, huge flaw with the current class definitions that omits this court's requirement in Robbins. But
I took the class definition and tried to see what I'd have to write into it. And this is just hypothetically. And the two things I wrote into it to narrow the class, and I understand why the plaintiffs don't want who has an affirmative EMC, because they'll say they didn't go get one because of they were already told they already had the negative. But anyway, you would write in two things: after follow-up medical services to a claimant after January 1 who have an affirmative EMC and who have had payment made of $2,500 already to a qualified provider because of a covered injury. So if you wrote in those two things, that seemed to tee up and take care of, if you've already paid $2,500 to a qualified provider because of a covered injury, I wrote this before you got into all of that, that would then tee up who those people are that look like they're, if in fact it's illegal to use the non-treating, that those would, if they had the bills of $7,500, then we're just talking about $7,500 more for them. Why would that not work as a class? Other than the advisory opinion, and I understand what you're saying about that, we'd still then have to go have individual determinations to make sure they had enough medical over $7,500. I got that, but it seems like we do that a lot in B2. We figure out the liability issue, and then you everybody's damages are not necessarily the same.
All right, Your Honor, just to respond to that, that would probably make it a more precise class definition than it is now, and it would certainly take care.
It would substantially make it a more precise.
Yes, type. And it would clearly take care of the Robbins glaring omission. But again, it is our position that the individual issues that would be incorporated in addressing all of the requirements for that class, but also the fact that, again, under these circumstances, this court, in insurance cases, the ones that we have cited, have not used a B2 in this scenario because there is an adequate available remedy to deal with the entirety of this. Instead of bifurcating it unnecessarily, it resolves the dispute in one fell swoop, which is what subsection 15 of the PIP statute contemplates.
Isn't in the amicus. Isn't there a different problem with that class, which is, as I understand it, the class that got certified was only for future injunctive relief. But wouldn't individuals have to go through the show of showing that they're likely to be injured in the future, and then they're likely to have the first determination, but then the insurance company gives a secondary determination that they didn't have an EMC, and isn't that going to be impossible to show? I would think that the providers are the only ones who have even an arguable future interest in the interpretation of this statute.
Well, and that raises yet another question. As I said, there's a lot here, and I'm limited to my time, and I'm over, but I will respond to your question. But that raises yet another problem, which is, yes, the way that the court has essentially split the baby, and we now have a B2, not a B3, is that it is now just for declaratory and injunctive relief, and there are several problems with that. In fact, in this court's very recent ruling in A&M Gerber, this court said that when you look to the threat of future injury in a PIP context, you don't look at the provider, you look at whether that particular insured is going to have a future injury.
Although one difference in that case, I do think, is that the plaintiffs specifically disclaimed any future injury. So I do think that makes it a little bit different. But for the individuals, I think it's really hard to say that they have standing to declaratory relief.
And as the paper showed before, two of these providers have been dissolved. And also in the papers, Progressive stopped sending these out to have the EMC question answered in 2016. That's in the factual record. The main reason it did it here, and I just give me 10 more seconds, I just want to wrap up, but the main reason Progressive was doing this here, in these cases, if you look at the facts, these weren't a scenario where the insured sent Progressive a determination that they had an EMC, and Progressive said, you know what, we're going to challenge that, we're going to send it out to someone else. That is not what happened. What happened in these few cases is that they had no determination. And until this court decided Robbins in 2015, there was a concern. It was unclear in the PIP world, in Florida PIP, about what happens in that gap between 2,500 and 10,000. Does it default to 10,000 or does it default to 2,500 when you don't have a negative EMC determination or an actual EMC determination? In Robbins, this court said and was subsequently affirmed by both the third DCA and the fourth DCA that in that gap, the default is 2,500 until they get one. But in this case, Progressive was before that was determined. Progressive looked at the facts and said, we don't know. You know what? So we're going to send this out to help. But this wasn't a scenario where they got an affirmative EMC determination and said, you know what? We're going to challenge that. In two of these cases, they sent it out for their own request for assistance way before they got an EMC, and the other one sort of crossed in the mail. Right, thank you very much. I reserve the rest of my time.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Gowdy.
I don't have a repeat. Brian Gowdy on behalf of the Appalese, Krista Collins, who's trial counsel, is with me here at the table. I want to start with, I think, some of these questions about modifying the class. And I want to point actually to Jacob Perez, who was the insured for AA Suncoast in this case, and make sure the court reviews Dr. Andriana's testimony at docket entry 111, pages 148 and 49, and stress how this is an ongoing injury for the individuals. Dr. Andriani testified how Mr. Perez decided not to get MRIs done because it went over the 2,500. And so, you know, cover it. This is a case about coverage. And so if you're an insured and you don't have health care or you don't have money to pay for these services, you want a declaration from the court that you're going to have coverage about above a certain amount. I think
isn't that really a damages case? If what you're saying is we want something other than the court to make a legal statement that this is what the law requires, if you're saying you want the court to look and say this particular person should have had this amount of coverage, now pay that.
It's not necessarily pay that, Your Honor, because, and I guess the analogy I would use that you see every day in or very often in both state and federal court is under a standard liability policy, say your homeowner's policy, someone slips and falls in your home, you get sued, and you want to, often people will go to court and sue their insurance company to say, you have a duty to defend me. You need to hire a lawyer for me. I need a professional. Do we know how much that's going to cost? No, you don't know till the years later. But at the onset, I want a declaration that I'm going to have a lawyer standing behind me because my decision whether to settle this case may depend greatly on whether someone else is going to pay for the legal fees. There's no amount set, okay? Same thing here. I'm injured in an auto accident. I want a declaration, am I going to have coverage for this injury? Am I going to have coverage of just $2,500 or $10,000? And in Mr. Perez's case, he didn't get the MRIs because the insurance company denied coverage above $2,500.
Isn't the question for him not will I have coverage in a future auto accident, but should I have had coverage in this accident I already had?
Yes, and that's still an ongoing injury because these patients will often could treat for years.
Aren't those exactly the same issues? And you obviously disagree with them, but aren't those exactly the same reasons that the district court rejected the damages class? You'd have to look, if that's really what this injunctive relief is going for, wouldn't you import all of the issues that gave concern to the district court for the damages class?
No, because so the damages class would be, let's say that there's a declaration here from the district. We go back, the district court declares that there should have been coverage up to $10,000 for Mr. Perez, okay? Now, both AAA Suncoast and Mr. Perez will have to prove in their individual damages case that the treatment is reasonable, necessary, related to the injury. Those are the damages issues that you see that she's talking about that do vary case by case. But this use of a negative EMC by a non-treater is a uniform practice of Progressive, and that they uniformly use to deny benefits to everyone in the class, regardless of whether the treatment was reasonable, necessary, related to the accident, excessively charged, had the right code. Yeah, all those individual issues will come up in the damages case, but the declaratory relief is common.
What is it that you are seeking for the declaratory relief?
Simply a declaration that Progressive's practice of using a non-treating provider to make a negative EMC determination violates the plain text of the Florida PIPS statute, the Florida no-fault statute, and that they should be enjoined from using these non-treating providers to make that negative determination.
Why do you even need a class for that kind of a claim? Couldn't one provider bring that claim and then the others would benefit from the legal determination?
No, because then if you only had one provider bring the claim, it would only be res judicata for that one provider and the insurance company, and Progressive could go ahead and do the unlawful practice for the other, you know.
I didn't understand you to be saying we want a decision that in this one particular case this action was wrong. I understood you to be saying as a matter of law, insurance companies cannot engage in this particular practice, and if they do, that's illegal. I don't expect that insurance companies would still abide by that.
No, they won't, because they'll be in a county court where it's less than $5,000 and there's no precedent set, and they'll continue to do it to the other 6,999 folks.
So you're saying that if we declare a practice unlawful, you think that all the insurance companies will just keep doing it? That's not typically how it works.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about principles of res judicata. If this court declares in this case that this practice is unlawful, Progressive will be bound, and it won't be able to do it for any other provider. As a matter of stare decisis, which is different than res judicata.
Where?
Yeah, sorry. I know you're smart, Your Honor.
Your contention ultimately is that an injunction in that sort of a single plaintiff case would be overbroad and unenforceable because it would go beyond the parties.
That's
right. So if you had Mr. Perez and his provider suing Progressive and you got a ruling in that case, the injunction couldn't go to any other provider and any other insurance company and any other claimant beyond Mr. Perez because they're not before the court, they haven't been heard, et cetera, et cetera. So that sort of an injunction would be, in effect, meaningless. And that's why if you're going to get this relief, you want to go the class action route. One of the things she argues is that some of the terms and definitions within the current class structure are themselves only susceptible to individual factual determinations. For example, who's a qualified provider? And what is your response to those sorts of concerns?
I agree
with that. I didn't get that as one of the main thrust of the appellant's briefs. But nevertheless, humor me.
I just want to point out, I think it's way, but I think Your Honor, in the discourse with the opposing counsel, made the points that I would make, which is I think these are all can be easily discernible from the record. The district court got into this mostly sealed record, and was it really, here's the thing. All you got to do is go to Progressive's own record and say, which claimants / providers did you get a non-treating provider to make a negative E&P determination? That's all we need to stop.
Well, except that your class is overbroad, right? Because you currently and potentially have people as members of the class or entities as members of the class who don't satisfy Robbins in terms of Article III standing. In other words, if you don't have a positive EMC determination, there's no way that you get anything beyond the $2,500 as things currently stand, right?
Right.
So you need to weed those people out of a class definition at the very least, don't you?
I would say that if that's what the court decides, we would suggest you send it back to the district court to work that out. I guess, and I got the sense from the questions earlier that that's what the court's leaning.
Well, we know you want to have people who say, because of this practice, we didn't try to get an affirmative EMC because we got a negative first, or we didn't go seek more treatment because of all of that. But that really opens up the class to a lot of ambiguity. So, and who falls within that? I didn't go get an affirmative EMC because I knew about this practice or the provider. Do you see our problem? And now we're faced with Robbins, so we have to, at a minimum, put who have an affirmative EMC.
Yeah.
What about, is there any problem with putting, I can see why that's a problem from your standpoint, although it may be necessary. What is there any problem with saying who have had payment of $2,500 to a qualified provider because of a covered injury, you're saying, it seems to me if you get some relief here and get some class, even if you have to narrow your class down to somebody who, provider like these three, they've submitted bills of $10,000, they said no, negative, you only have $2,500. That gets you somewhere, doesn't it?
Yes. So let me try to go quickly through these.
Okay.
As I heard, of course, the prior questions, you wanted to add two things. One was people who had an affirmative EMC.
That's the one thing.
Right. And I think that could be workable. But I want to go back to why.
And it's not a matter of workable, it's because Robbins says we have a standing problem without it.
I'm going to address that last, if that's right.
Okay. All right. And then the second part is that Progressive has paid $2,500 to a qualified provider because of a covered injury, but denied more payment because of the negative EMC. Does he have a negative EMC, too, from a non-treating person? That's why he's here.
From a non-treater.
Okay, but the problem is that really gets into an unwieldy class. Yeah. I didn't go get more treatment, do you see?
I
was concerned it wouldn't be paid for. It gets a little wishy.
Yeah, I disagree, and this is where I guess I'll get to the main point. It doesn't get to an unwieldy class.
Okay. Wouldn't that be anybody really who's made a PIP claim since January 2013? Because
no.
It could have been $1,000, it could have been this, but they.
No. The class is limited to, and it's in their record, it's the people, whether the provider slash claimant for which Progressive sent the record.
Sent notice of the negative.
Physician at that contractor was non-treating physician,
I'm going to switch. Okay, I'm going to switch gears a minute. Has the state of Florida, state courts ruled on this non-treating negative EMC? It seems like it's not a tough statutory question because it's got to be a provider. The plain language is here, so if you ever get to the merits, it doesn't seem like a harder test. But do we not have state courts saying you can't do this?
I'm unaware of any presidential state court decision.
Okay.
Courts.
Well, but they can be appealed. Okay. Nothing.
Are you familiar with the Cartman v. State Farm case from the Seventh Circuit?
Yes.
Why? I assume you think that case is wrong, or perhaps you think it's different than this case. Isn't it true here as there that the injunction envisioned by the plaintiffs would in no sense be a final remedy? A class-wide roof reinspection would only lay an evidentiary foundation for subsequent individual determinations of liability and damages. What year was that case?
Yes, I would really encourage the court to read this case.
Just the year.
2012.
Okay.
And it discusses Walmart v. Gooch. And I know I'm way over my time here.
Can you give me the site to Gooch?
Yes, 672F3-402. And it says Jordan will let me just read a little bit from it, or do you want me to sit down?
You have 30 seconds. That's okay. Just tell us what page it is. We'll look at it.
Okay, I don't have the pinpoint site. That's my bad.
That's okay. Don't worry. We have the site, so we'll find the case and we'll certainly read it.
Sure. It makes the point that declaratory relief can be a precursor to later monetary damages. And it's in the insurance context. And she's gonna get up and tell you dicta. That's untrue. What happened there was that the class was decertified because of a case in Arkansas and some race judicata, and the Sixth Circuit sent it back for the court to reshape the class definition and said, so we don't have to do this again, here are your instructions. It's not dicta. They sent it back and said, here's how you should reshape this in light of the competing Arkansas class, because it was an overbroad class that included some people in the federal class.
Okay.
So not dicta, and I think very on point.
All right, thank you, Mr. Gowdy. Thank you.
I would respond to a few points, Your Honor. First of all,
wouldn't you have to litigate those issues in every single case anyways?
Well, that's our reason why the class makes no sense, because it doesn't drive the resolution of the case.
But it also cuts against your cost argument, because you'd be litigating the same issue over and over and over again in every single one of these thousands of cases.
But the B2 doesn't stop that. That's the point.
No, my only point is that your cost argument might be a bit too much, because you'd be spending the same amount of money relitigating the same legal issue in every county court in the state if it wasn't resolved here. I'm not challenging you on the other point, but your cost argument might be a bit exaggerated, I think.
What have the county courts said on the statutory interpretation issue? Both ways. I assume there are some people who did have an affirmative EMC, who did have claims over 10,000 that are clearly their hospital claims, okay? Like you said earlier, that would clearly provide, and they were EMC, and then were told, no, the non-treater said, no, you didn't need to go to the hospital, and had a negative EMC. Wouldn't there be some people that whose claims are truly ripe now and have no defense
Your Honor,
to them?
Okay.
What types of claims were sent out for negative EMCs?
We've taken you way over your time, so if you want to wrap up, you can go ahead and do that. All right. Thank you all very much. We really do appreciate it. Well, we are in recess until tomorrow morning.
Y'all go ahead. I'm coming.